This is the Living Homegrown Podcast, episode 143.
Welcome to the Living Homegrown Podcast, where it's all about how to live farm fresh without the farm. To help guide the way to a more flavorful and sustainable lifestyle is your host, national PBS TV producer and canning expert, Teresa Lowe.
Hey there, everybody. Welcome to the podcast. I'm your host, Teresa Lowe, and this podcast is where we talk about living farm fresh without the farm. And that includes organic small space food growing, canning and fermenting the harvest, and artisan food crafts like baking your own bread. It's all about the different ways that we can live closer to our food and take small, delicious steps towards living a more sustainable lifestyle. If you'd like to learn more about any of these topics or my online courses, my coaching, or my Living Homegrown membership, just visit my website, livinghomegrown.com. Today's episode is all about eggs. Now, it doesn't matter if you are a backyard chicken keeper or you are just curious about the eggs that you might be purchasing at the farmer's market or even at your local store or co-op. I wanted you guys to understand more of the information on how chickens work and what we can do if we want to buy certain breeds and get certain colors of our eggs. So I brought on author Jennifer Sartell, and the name of her new book is called Epic Eggs, The Poultry Enthusiast's Complete and Essential Guide to the Most Perfect Food. Now, this is not a cookbook. It is more like a book on how eggs work. It was really fascinating to me, and I loved the beautiful photographs of the different colored eggs. She talks about everything from different breeds to ways that we can take care of the eggs after we bring them in the house. But it's not a cookbook at all, which is what I expected it to be. So I don't want you guys to think that. But what we talk about in today's episode is everything from some of the breeds that you can get, the difference between Araucana, Americana, and Easter eggers, what we can do if we want to hatch some of our eggs, also what to do if we find some old eggs in the back of the refrigerator. There's a test that we can do on them to make sure that they're still fresh and viable, and what we can do if we get a whole bunch of extra eggs in the springtime, how we can preserve them for later. So let me tell you a little bit about Jennifer. Jennifer Sartell and her husband Zach manage their 14-acre Iron Oak farm, where they raise Angora and dairy goats, heritage Black Spanish turkeys, ducks, geese, bees, and of course, chickens. Jennifer graduated from Oakland University in Rochester, Michigan. Her writing, illustrations, and photography have been published in numerous books and magazines, both in print and online. And she is a regular contributor to Ogden Publications Community Chickens Blogspot. Now, everything that we talk about in today's episode is in the show notes for the episode. And to get to that, you just go to livinghomegrown.com/143. And I should also point out that although this book, Epic Eggs, has a focus on chickens, Jennifer knows a lot about all different types of birds, so she talks about other eggs as well in this book. Now, before we dive into the interview, I just want to tell you that today's podcast episode is brought to you by my Living Homegrown Institute, which is my membership site. Now, I believe that living an organic farm-fresh lifestyle is really a journey in learning. And as we learn different skills, such as food fermentation, food growing, or even critter keeping, there are three distinct stages of growth. We start out with curiosity, we move into experimentation, and eventually we grow into mastery of these skills. Now, if you're working on creating your own farm fresh lifestyle and you're curious where you fall on that growth scale, I've got a free resource for you. It's my Farm Fresh Success Path that my students use inside my Learning Institute, and it'll help you decide where you are on your own journey, the characteristics of that stage, and some action steps that you can take to get to the next level. To get my Success Path PDF, just go to livinghomegrown.com/path, and you can download it there for free. Okay, so with that, let's dive into my interview with Jennifer Sartell, the author of Epic Eggs. Hey, Jennifer, thank you so much for coming on the show today.
Hi, Teresa. Thanks for having me. Excited to be here.
Well, your book was so intriguing to me, and it was not what I thought it was going to be when I first read the title. So I think my listeners are going to be really intrigued by this book as well. But before we dive into everything about eggs, I would love to have you tell everybody a little bit about your background and how you got interested in poultry eggs.
I started raising chickens when I was about 14 years old, and I didn't come from a farming family or a farming community, but my dad and I had gone to a local co-op to get some bird feed for the songbirds, and they were selling chicks, and I didn't know anything about raising chickens. We just picked up 6 little yellow chicks, and they actually ended up being meat birds, and we didn't know what to feed them. This was like before the internet, before you could look up, you know, every fact that you needed to know about a chicken. We fed them corn. They got huge. So it was like a you know, happy-go-lucky kind of endeavor. And then I just fell in love after that. And I started renting books from the library and found out that there were tons of different breeds of chickens that you could get into. And I've been hooked ever since.
I totally understand, because I love chickens as well. I have, yep. Right now I just have 3, because I have a very tiny, I have 1/10 of an acre in the heart of Los Angeles. So I just have 3.
Oh, wow, yeah.
Yeah, I just have 3 birds, and I can have up to 5 as long as I don't have roosters. But right. I have loved every minute of having backyard chickens. It's been 9 or 10 years now that I've had them, and the nice. Eggs are wonderful, and they're beautiful, and they're, you know, definitely conversation starters when people yep. come over. But you have a lot of other animals, and you actually have like a hobby or functioning farm. What exactly do you have going on with your homestead?
So right now we have a U-pick lavender farm that we're opening this summer. Last year we did sunflowers, U-pick sunflowers. We're going to do that again this year. It was a way bigger success than I ever imagined. And we also have, we raise dairy goats and fiber goats. I spin and sell the yarn on Etsy. And then we raise 6 different breeds of chickens, and I'm in the process right now of getting our farm NPIP certified, which will allow me to ship to most states hatching eggs and chicks. I'm probably going to just do hatching eggs because I feel like that's easier, but there's rules that you have to follow when you ship across borders, actually within borders too. And so we're in the process of doing that right now.
Oh, wow. That is so fascinating. So with the eggs, so you're saying it's a little bit easier to ship the egg than versus the live chick that was just born?
I think so. Yeah. It's easier, I think, in like packing, and you don't have to have supply like a heat. You don't have to ship a minimum. You know, the chicks aren't jostled around during shipping. I mean, there's nothing wrong with shipping chicks, but I just find that hatching eggs are easier. If you have a mishap, it's an egg, not a live, you know,
right.
chick.
Right. So. And I think it's fun if you have kids and you're able to do that with them. It's kind of a fun
yeah.
experience. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
Let's talk about your book, because in the promo material that I first got, it said very clearly, this is not a cookbook. Mm-hmm. and that's what I thought it was going to be. You know, it's called Epic Eggs, The Poultry Enthusiast's Complete and Essential Guide to the Most Perfect Food. So my first thought was, oh, an egg cookbook. But it's
right.
not at all. And then when I started reading it, I found it really fascinating, because it was all about, and you cover more than chicken eggs, like you cover other poultry, but it's all
right.
about eggs in general and chickens especially. So I thought it was just really great. How would you describe the book to people?
I feel like the book is sort of, it does cover beginners, but I feel like it's sort of a transitional book. It's for beginners who are interested in eventually having a rooster and breeding. I mean, there's lots of information about eggs, but I would say that would be like my target audience, is that it talks about how you breed chickens to get certain egg colors, what breeds to get if you want, you know, certain egg colors. It talks about, you know, fertility and how an egg is formed. So, I mean, I would say that would be the audience. It's less about getting started with backyard chickens and more about what you can do with your flock to get the egg color or the egg quality that you want from your chickens.
Yeah. And I think actually, you know, even though I don't want to do any breeding, I found it interesting because it would help me understand what I might want to purchase. And so from a consumer who would just be buying from somebody, I just found it really interesting. And, you know, anyone who is even thinking about going into backyard chickens or even, you know, homesteading or farming with chickens, there is such a huge variety of egg color and they're so beautiful. Mm-hmm. So let's talk about that first. What are some of the colors and the different breeds that we could go for?
So my absolute favorite egg color and one of my favorite breeds are the Marans. Marans lay the darkest egg of any chicken, particularly the French black copper Maran. And there's actually an egg color chart that the Maran Breeders of America have, and they assigned different numbers showing the darkness of the eggs. And I believe it's a 9 that is the darkest. It's like this deep, deep chocolate burgundy color. It's gorgeous. And so that's what every Maran breeder is after, is that dark, dark color. You can get green, blue, and even some pink eggs with the Easter eggers. You can get blue eggs from cream leg bars or Americanas and Araucanas. Most chickens lay a brown egg, you know, and the variation in color from light brown to dark brown is different with each breed. But even though white is our most common grocery store color, most chickens actually lay brown eggs.
Ah, I didn't even know that. Yeah, that's really interesting. Well, no, the Maran egg is absolutely gorgeous. And I think that is one of the reasons I would want one, is that it does create a absolutely gorgeous egg. And if anyone's ever seen those beautiful like Instagram photos that people do where they have the mix of colors, you always can pinpoint the Maran egg in there. They're just absolutely lovely. Well, you mentioned Easter eggers, and I'd love to talk about that because I have an Easter egger. And I think, especially if someone is new to backyard chicken keeping, they may not know really what an Easter egg is or Easter egger is. It's kind of like I call them like a mutt. So could you explain the two breeds, the Americana Easter egger and the Araucana, and how that all fits together?
So the Araucana is a heritage breed that originated from Chile, and it's a rumpless, tufted breed that lays blue eggs, and they're very sought after because of the blue egg laying. However, the gene that causes the tufting is also deadly. It's actually a mutation that can kill some of the chicks, and they don't have a great hatch rate, and so it's sort of a tough breed to proliferate. So in the 1970s, a group of Americans tried to change the genetic makeup of the bird, and they created the Americana, which resulted in a blue-laying bird that has muffs and a tail. So the two breeds are connected, you know, with the same lineage, but they tried to improve on that deadly mutation. So that's where Araucanas and Americanas come from. Now, when you go to pet stores or feed stores or sometimes even hatcheries, they'll be selling, a lot of times they'll call them either Araucanas or Americanas, and what they actually are Easter eggers, which can be an assortment of different interesting egg color layers, anything from green, blue, even some pink. And it's sort of a mutt collection of different genes. And so when you get an Easter egger, they can look different from one another. They can lay different colored eggs. But a lot of times they have that genes of the Americana and the Araucana, which is why they sometimes look like especially Americanas. But yeah, they're essentially just a mutt.
Yeah. And when I got mine, I knew full well it was an Easter egger, even though it had been labeled an Americana because I had read up on it beforehand. And it was actually really kind of exciting for us to wait and see what color her egg was. And she ended up being army green, which thrilled my two little boys at the time. They were very young. They thought that was like the coolest egg color ever. But if someone doesn't know, when you're talking about muffs and tufts, you're talking about the little puff of feathers on their cheeks, right?
Right. Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
Okay. I think the Araucana actually look a little odd. They have a kind of a weird look to them, but the egg colors are so beautiful. So, So if you want to get something like that. Getting an Easter egger, they're a really great temperament. At least mine
they
is.
Are.
Yeah. Yep. And so it doesn't mean that, you know, it's a lesser breed to me. It's just kind of, you have the fun of, you know, it's kind of like not knowing if your baby's going to be a girl or a boy. You don't know what color egg you're going to get.
Yep. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's just, you know, what you want with your chickens. You know, I mean, some people are into breeds, you know, standard or perfection. Some people just want colorful eggs. You know, there's no like good or bad chicken. It's just whatever you want with your flock.
Right, right. Okay. So if someone wants to have their backyard chickens, one of the questions that I get from people is, and you probably get this too, is how many eggs do I get with each chicken? Is that like the most common question that you get for
new? It's up there.
So I'll have you explain how that all works.
So chickens, for the most part, will never lay more than one egg a day. Each hen will lay one egg, and then it takes her body 24 hours for her cycle to complete again, and then she's ready to lay another egg. During their first year, they usually won't lay a ton because all of their energy is going toward growing up and things like that. A lot of times you won't start getting eggs until after your first winter if you live in a cold climate. Sometimes you get, you know, late summer, early fall, sometimes your hens will start laying a little bit. But in the wintertime, egg production will kind of drop off, and that has less to do with the cold and more to do with the amount of daylight that the chickens are exposed to. Birds have a real sensitivity to the number of daylight hours. It's what prompts the wild birds to fly south. It's what prompts the molt. So as the chickens enter into those shorter daylight period, they will start dropping off their egg production. So eggs are actually a seasonal product. They lay the most in the spring and summer, and then usually the molt will happen in the fall. And your flock will stop laying during the molt because they're conserving energy to create feathers. And then sometimes you'll get a little bit before winter starts. Oftentimes nothing again until spring, or at least few and far between.
Yes, absolutely. And the next question I get from people is, well, then how come I can buy eggs all year? But that's because the commercial farmers of eggs will put artificial light. And
sure, yep.
I know some people do that. I do not. I like to let my girls rest. But, you know, a lot of people do put artificial light into the coop so that they have the number of hours, I guess, of light. Right.
Yep.
Okay.
Okay. Yep. 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 Yep.
Okay, perfect. So if we have a rooster in our group or in our flock, how many days would it take for me to hatch an egg if it had been fertilized?
How we do our hatching is, you know, if you only have a few chickens, you know, you might have to collect eggs for a couple days to actually fill up your incubator. So if you have a fertilized egg, that egg will stay viable for about 10 days, which means it's kind of like a seed. Like your seed is fertilized, and it won't start growing until you add water and, you know, warmth and things like that. And an egg is very similar. So you can collect your fertilized eggs and put them in the incubator all at the same time, and those cells won't start dividing until the heat and the moisture is actually applied. So your chickens will all hatch at the same time. And it takes a chick 21 days to turn into a chick in the egg, and it will hatch after 21 days.
Ah, okay. So if we wanted to hatch our own, or if someone were to purchase fertilized eggs from you and want to hatch them their own, is it a fairly inexpensive thing to get a little hatchery?
Yeah, there's even plans online where you can make your own incubators. I mean, you need a constant heat source, you need a source of humidity, and you need time, and you have to turn the eggs so that the yolk doesn't adhere to the outer shell. Yeah, I mean, you can get incubators that are foolproof, that turn the eggs themselves, that regulate the humidity, that regulate the heat, or you can get something real simple like a wooden box and a light bulb. I mean, it's a little bit more into it than that. You'd have to look up some plans online, but I would say if I was going to look for breeds that weren't in my local feed store, my next place to look would be from hatching eggs. And you can have them shipped in, and then you can put them in your incubator. And for relatively inexpensive, just the cost of running a heating element, you can hatch out your own chicks.
Okay. Okay, great. Because that's something I have never done, but it always sounded fun. Now
It's fascinating.
I'm sure it is. The only risk is that you don't know, like they haven't been sexed, so you wouldn't know if you're getting male or female. But even in sexed chickens that we buy as baby chicks, they, you know, there's always the risk of a rooster because it's not an exact science. But this would be very fun. And if you have a larger area where you can have a rooster, you know, here in the city, we have laws like I can't have a rooster. So
crowing. Yeah.
Yes, exactly. And so if I did get a rooster, I have a rooster plan. You know, I have someone who can take it.
Nice.
Because, yeah. So I always tell people, if you're going to do this and you absolutely cannot have a rooster, you have to have a rooster plan. Now, you know, some people, that might mean they're going to, you know, cull the chicken. But a lot of people are doing this for pets with kids and they don't want to do that. So you have to have a place for this rooster to go and don't just let it go out in the wild because it cannot survive. And I know a lot of people who do that and think, oh, I'll just let it run free. No, you're just feeding the coyotes. So don't do that. If you are trying to save its life, then don't do that.
That's a great point. Yeah. If you're going to do it, you have to be responsible.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Yep. But if you can have a rooster, or you have a place that, you know, have a friend who has a farm or whatever that you could, if you get a get, you know, all roosters, you'd have a place for them to go, then it's definitely would be a fun thing to do. Absolutely.
Yes.
Now, something I forgot to ask you, though, when we were talking about the colors of the eggs, I know that sometimes the earlobe color is a match to the egg, or is that a myth?
No, it is true. It's not true with every single breed, but it is a good indicator. So if you know, are at like a poultry show or something and you want to buy a chicken and you can't, you know, look up what color egg that breed is going to lay, a good indicator, it's probably right maybe like 75-80% of the time, is if the chicken has a red earlobe, it's more likely to lay a brown egg. If the chicken has a white earlobe, it's more likely to lay a white egg.
Okay, cool. Yeah, I was wondering how accurate that was. So about 80%, that's pretty good. That's that's about the same as, you know, how likely you'll get a rooster.
You
have like about a 20-30% chance, I guess. Okay, so one of the questions I wanted you to answer for people is about egg freshness. And I loved that you had this in your book, because I had learned this also, you know, just from being an owner, is that let's say we're keeping our eggs in the refrigerator and we have some kind of in the back of the refrigerator and we're like, how old are these? Mm-hmm. You have a little test that we can do. It's called the float test.
Yep.
So can you explain how that works?
Sure. So as an egg ages, the shell on an egg is not like a sealed container. It actually has microscopic pores where it allows oxygen to flow through. So as an egg ages, oxygen goes through those pores and actually will dehydrate out some of the egg content. So the older the egg, the more air that's inside the shell. So with that air, if you want to check how old an egg is, if you float the egg, a fresh, solid, you know, thinking inside of it, moist egg inside, will sink right to the bottom. And as the egg ages, it will start to sort of tip up to where the pointy end is sort of, you know, up on end. And that's okay. Those are still edible. But if the egg is completely buoyant and floats at the top, then I wouldn't eat those eggs. I mean, sometimes they're okay, but I wouldn't chance it.
Yeah.
I would just discard them.
Yeah, because they're pretty old at that point.
Yep.
Yeah. But I thought that was great, because once you have your own chickens, you know, you're rotating those eggs through your refrigerator. And if you don't have a good system, or someone like places some fresh brought in eggs and they put them over in the corner. And I've had it happen many times where I'm like, how old is this egg? I have no idea. Maybe one of my kids just brought it in because there was only one and they put it in a bowl and stuck it to the back. And now I have no idea when it, you know, if it's even good.
We free range our chickens, and a lot of times our girls will end up in our barn, in the hay barn, and they'll lay a great big clutch of eggs, and we find it and it's like, well, how old are all these eggs now? You know, like we didn't know she had these in here. And so that's a great way to test those too.
Oh yeah, absolutely. That's a really good point. Well, let's talk about temperature for a minute, since we're kind of on that in refrigeration. Now I refrigerate my eggs, but I know that there's a, you know, like this is like big controversy. Some people are like, you do not have to refrigerate. And other people, you do have to refrigerate. And actually, from my research, there seems to be really good documentation on both ends. But America, you know, I went through culinary school. So like they really drill into you to refrigerate. And we have different standards than like England. In England, they don't refrigerate. Right. So and, you know, they have the same amount of salmonella that we do, from what I understand. So I was just curious, do you refrigerate or do you not? Not refrigerate?
So I refrigerate after I wash our eggs. And I would like to say that I feel like, you know, there are as many different opinions about this and as many different standards to this as there are chicken people. Mm-hmm. And I feel like there's a pretty big window, you know, of variance in your practices. But we do refrigerate. I refrigerate after I wash, just because when the egg is laid, it's coated in a bloom, which prevents bacteria or a lot of bacteria from flowing in and out of the egg pores. So once I wash it, that bloom is removed. So the egg actually spoils faster. If you cool your eggs before you wash the bloom, there is some things that say that it can draw bacteria into the egg. Now, how much bacteria, you know, what are your real chances of getting sick from an egg like that? I mean, obviously not very much, because, you know, you refrigerate your eggs before you wash them and you're fine.
Yeah.
So it's really just, I kind of like to say, like, how paranoid do you want to be?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Yeah. No, I think that's really good. And that's really the point I wanted to make. Cause like we do it differently. Like I do not wash my eggs. I harvest first thing in the morning. So they aren't sitting in the chicken poo all day and rolling around in a dirty, in a dirty thing. So I keep it very clean. I pick them up every morning and then I immediately refrigerate, and I don't wash them cause I don't want to wash off the bloom, but I wash them just before I use them. And you do the opposite. You bring them in, you wash them first, and then you refrigerate. And the biggest point is that an egg has little tiny microscopic holes, like you said. The bloom that's on there from the chicken does provide a protective layer.
Yes.
But with time, that bloom deteriorates. And it's not like it's, you know, like it's Fort Knox. It's still things can get in there. So definitely, you know, compared to the commercial industrialized chicken egg, where first of all, they're probably shot up with antibiotics, but also the conditions that they're in and the health of the birds versus the health of my birds, I feel very comfortable, and I've never been sick from my eggs, and I know you haven't either. So definitely a personal choice, though. And I think you're right. It's like, how paranoid do you want to be? And I don't feel like there's really a right or wrong, because everybody has data to back it up. So that's why I wanted to bring it up, because we do it differently, and I have no problem with the way you do it, and I know you don't have a problem with the way I do it. And everyone just has to pick what works for them. And
I think they need just do some research, learn why to refrigerate and why to wash or why not to wash. You know, learn about the bloom and then decide what's right for you and use some common sense. And I think you'll be fine.
Yep, exactly. So good. I'm glad we talked about that.
Yep.
One thing I wanted to ask you about, because I loved that you had this in the book as well, is when you have your own chickens, and you know, I only have three and you have a lot more than that, but we end up getting a lot of eggs sometimes in the springtime, and you had a way of freezing them. So could we talk about that? How do you preserve your extra eggs?
Yeah, it's really easy. You can just, if you have a cupcake tin with the nonstick coating on the cupcake tin, just crack an egg in each of the cupcake tins and then freeze it, you know, like uncovered or anything, until they're frozen solid, maybe like 2-3 hours. And then I take them out and I just crack them like ice cubes, and you can store them in Ziploc bags in your freezer. And they don't make a great fried egg. The yolk encasing kind of breaks down in the freezing process. And so if you put it in your frying pan, it's just not going to be like a fresh farm egg. But they work great for scrambled eggs. They work good in, you know, baking or anything that you're going to not want that beautiful presentation for a fried egg.
Yeah, very cool. And so the trick, though, is do not keep them inside the shell, because the shell I imagine they expand and it explodes anyway.
Yeah. I mean, anyone who's raised chickens, even in cold climates, you know, if I don't get out there first thing in the morning right after the girls lay, you know, the eggs will freeze and they'll break open just because the contents expands. And so sometimes we have to get rid of eggs that are, you know, broken in the nest box. But yeah, the shell will open up and some of the insides will start to push out.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I think that's a great way to do it. And I like the idea of then taking them and putting them in baggies. So if you need two eggs, you can just pull them right out of the bag. So very cool.
Yeah. Just thaw them out in the refrigerator, like overnight or whatever. You know, if you're going to have scrambled eggs in the morning, take your eggs out the night before and put them in the fridge.
Perfect. Okay. Something else I wanted to ask you about was that you cover other poultry, other birds besides chickens. And
yes.
So one of the birds that you talk about, you know, you talk about ducks and geese and everything, but you also talked about quail. And mm-hmm. I was really fascinated by that because they do sell quail, eggs and quail at my local feed store here in Los Angeles because mm-hmm. I love quail eggs. And I always thought it would be fun to have some quail, but I'm sure, you know, they're wild, so you can't like let them run around like you do your chickens. So
right.
If I wanted to raise quail, they just have to have their own enclosure, right? I wouldn't keep mm-hmm. them with the chickens.
Right. Yeah. They're pretty tiny. And I mean, you know, you might get some pecking if you kept them with chickens. Quail also eat a different diet than chickens. So it might be challenging to keep the two different feeds separated. Quail should be fed a game bird feed, which has a higher protein content. I believe it's 28% protein. So yeah, that might be difficult keeping quail with chickens. I would keep them, yeah, in their own separate pen. Like I kind of look at quail like raising rabbits.
Yeah.
You know, like they can stay in a smaller pen. They're a smaller bird. But the nice thing about quail is that everything's fast tracked. They mature faster. They hatch quicker. Their hatch period is 14 to 18 days, depending on the breed. There's different breeds of quail, but it's anywhere from 14 to 18 days. They can start laying at 6 weeks. So you get smaller eggs, but you get them quicker. So it's kind of I think they're a great addition to a farmstead.
Yeah, and they're so cute.
They are. They're really cute.
Yeah, I mean, I know people eat them, but I think that if I were to ever do it, I would want them for the eggs. So it would just be a fun little side project. But yeah, okay, well, that's really cool. So if people are interested in other types of eggs, you do talk about other eggs in the book, which I thought was really great. Well, Jennifer, thank you so much for coming on the show today. This was really fascinating information, and I just really appreciate you taking time to share it with my listeners.
Well, thank you for sharing my book. It was fun.
Well, I hope you enjoyed that interview with Jennifer Sartell, the author of Epic Eggs. I found her book really fascinating, and if you are raising backyard chickens or thinking about it, I think you'll enjoy her book as well. To get more information on Jennifer and her book, you can just go to livinghomegrown.com/143. And remember that today's podcast episode was brought to you by my Living Homegrown Institute, which is my membership site. And if you would like to get a copy of my Farm Fresh Success Path, you can go to livinghomegrown.com/path and download it there for free. So that's it for this week. I hope you enjoyed that episode. I have lots more that I am working on right now that I can't wait to share. I love bringing you people who are living the same lifestyle that we are striving to have for ourselves. So until next time, just try to live a little more local, seasonal, and homegrown. Take care, everybody.
That's all for this episode of the Living Homegrown Podcast. Visit livinghomegrown.com to download Teresa's free canning resource guide and find more tips on how to live farm fresh without the farm. Be sure to join Teresa Lowe next time on the Living Homegrown Podcast.